It's the World Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. Coming up on this week's show, Amazon makes their Premier League debut in the UK, ABC to broadcast 5 games from next summer's Euro 2020, impressions from Liga MX playoffs this far, and competition among low-cost streaming services just gets greater. Plus, in addition to that, we've got NWSL setting the foundation, possibly, for some smart media moves. Plus, we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Kartik Krishnaiyer. Now, Kartik, you and I both have been very busy the last 2 weeks. Everything from the international break to Thanksgiving and, lots of things going on in our
Soccer
lives.
SoccerX,
that's right. Yeah, SoccerX, because you went to Miami for SoccerX and I went to North Carolina for a college showcase. Any highlights from SoccerX? Any interesting insights in terms of the TV markets?
No, it was just a lot of chatter about CBS and what they're going to do with the Champions League and a lot of speculation about what Amazon, which obviously now we're 2 weeks on from SoccerX and they've made their debut, what Amazon Prime is going to do in terms of covering the Premier League in the UK market. And it was the people I've talked to since the last 48 hours have thought it was refreshing. Compared to granted, a lot of these are Manchester City fans, so keep that in mind. Manchester City fans tend to have a built-in grievance against the established British media,
right?
Which is something that if you don't know the history of the culture, fan culture of Manchester City, maybe you can get enlightened on it. There's this perceived notion that the media is dominated by Manchester United fans and Manchester United corporate interests or aligned corporate interests. So there seemed to be a lot of Manchester City supporters who were very pleased with the Burnley Manchester City coverage.
Yep.
Happy that Nigel de Jong was part of that coverage.
Really?
Former Manchester City legend. And that
let me just chime in here too for listeners who don't know. So this week in the United Kingdom, for the first time ever, this season, part of the rights were bought by Amazon Prime. There weren't many interested parties in it, but Amazon Prime went ahead and acquired some rights to the midweek matches this week in the UK only, nowhere else, as well as, I think, Boxing Day. So there's a lot of matches. And that's the thing, Kartik, too.
I think they have a match day at the end of January or beginning of February, midweek. So they've got those three boxes.
Okay.
So they have three match days, basically.
And that's the interesting thing, though, Kartik, too, with Amazon in the UK. Obviously, the same company that did the behind-the-scenes Manchester City documentary series, The All or Nothing. So there's got to be some kind of love, so to speak, between the Man City fans and Amazon. And like you said, too, looking at, say, BT Sport or looking at the BBC or Sky Sports and thinking that they're jaded or they're biased against City when they're probably just trying to be fair and give it some good, fair analysis, we would hope. It's interesting, too, Kartik. I've obviously been in the US. I didn't get a chance to watch any of the UK coverage. But there was a comment on worldsoccertalk.com today from one of our readers. And let me just pull that up too. And that was in regards to the UK coverage. It was from a person that uses the username ME. It's not me, it's somebody else. But anyway, he says, the Amazon UK coverage is fantastic. Every single match has its own studio presentation, all live from each ground, its own commentary teams, and a separate live goals look-in show with its own presentation team. One of the games each night is in UHD, Ultra HD, HDR, with everything else in full HD 1080p. The bar has been set high. And that's the thing. It's possible in the future that Amazon might look at other markets, maybe the United States, when the Premier League rights are up for expiration, which is, 2022? And they may look at the US and say, okay, well, it's working so well for us in the UK. This is a great opportunity for us to get more people to subscribe to Prime and get us into the Amazon ecosphere. And here it is. Anything else, Kartik, that you've heard on your side in terms of what the coverage has been like?
Yeah, so people have been pretty happy with it. And the other thing I heard from the city supporters I talked to is that accessibility. Look, again, this comes as a shock. And I don't know how many times a year we say this, Chris, so maybe it's not a shock to our longtime listeners anymore. But to people in the U.S., how few matches are on in the U.K. typically in the Premier League, and how difficult, how inaccessible those two channels are that cover the Premier League currently, which are Sky Sports, who've covered the league since the beginning. In fact, the league was largely formed thanks to Sky Sports, in large part with Sky Sports and BT Sports. So those networks are pretty inaccessible. Amazon Prime is a lower price point and a lot more accessible to the average British household. So outside of Match of the Day, which is on terrestrial television, and you get the highlights and you get the Match of the Day treatment, this is the most accessible. Say the people I've spoken to that they feel the Premier League has been in some time to them, which is interesting. In fact, there's one contact I have in the UK, and I know he listens to this show, actually, who told me he hadn't seen the Premier League match in 4 years. He's watching the Football League. He's knocking around his local club in the south on the south coast because the Premier League's just not accessible to people like him. And so he was able to watch Manchester City and Burnley on Amazon Prime, and was thankful that he got to see a Premier League match for a change.
Yeah, and some of the commentators, Derek Cray was doing one of the matches. John Champion went over there to do
Ian Dark.
So in terms of the crew that they use, the talent, the studio, all top name people. So it's an impressive beginning for Amazon. It does make you wonder, like I said before too, about the Premier League, but why not stop at the Premier League? I mean, there's going to be other rights available too. I mean, Major League Soccer is another one that's up in a couple of years, and I'm sure there'll be lots of other soccer rights available too. So obviously the UK being a very extremely soccer-centric market, that's the big one there. But we'll have to wait and see. In the United States, hopefully we'll see some Amazon bidding on some of these rights pretty soon. Now, Kartik, anything else from this past week? Well, actually, we haven't talked about anything from this past week that you've watched. Let me chime in here, Kartik. One thing that I find that at this time of the year, we're entering that phase, that busy time of the European soccer calendar, where the games are coming thick and fast. And to me, they seem more exciting. They seem more open-ended. We've had everything from, I mean, lots of 2-2s, 3-3s, a lot of defensive mistakes, a lot of teams pushing harder, which leaves holes in the back sometimes. I mean, it's a busy time. It's an important time of the season. But the Norwich-Arsenal game over the weekend, I enjoyed. The Man United-Aston Villa game. That last Thursday's Sporting Braga against Wolves game played in the rain. Really, really good game. Monday's Mainz against Frankfurt game was another great one. The Newcastle-Man City match I thought was intriguing in terms of the back and forth and just some spectacular goals there. What do you think, Kartik? Do you agree that is this just a kind of a myth that it gets more exciting, or are you feeling it?
Well, I mean, I think the matches are exciting. I mean, I think they're entertaining. That doesn't mean that it's quality football. I think the best match from a football perspective was Atleti and Barcelona. That was a match that took an absolutely brilliant goal to break a 0-0 deadlock.
Yeah.
Brilliant goal by Messi toward the end of that match. But I wonder also if Simeone, they spent more money now. They've got some really good attacking players. Obviously, lost Griezmann, but maybe he's having a hard time adjusting to playing a more fluid, free-flowing, entertaining style. But yeah, I think that these matches have been entertaining. I thought there were some very, very entertaining matches this weekend. Although we saw some good defending too, because I think you had to have very good defending from Leverkusen to see out that 2-1 at the Allianz against Bayern. Thought that was a very, very surprisingly good defensive performance in the second half, given how Petr Bosz's teams often defend in those situations, and particularly have defended against Bayern and his history of playing Bayern at both Dortmund and Leverkusen. And then I think, quite honestly, this might sound ridiculous, but I think Manchester United given that match was fraught with danger towards the end. I'm talking about the match on not the match against Spurs, which I have not seen yet, but the match against Aston Villa, mm-hmm. that they defended pretty well in the last 20-25 minutes. So sometimes the score lines can be misleading. There are some good individual pieces of defending. Manchester United did not start Phil Jones in this match like they did against Sheffield United, which yeah, I felt bad. I thought the commentators – we didn't have a show last week, but I thought the commentators were really rough on Phil Jones. He had a horrible match, clearly, first half, Sheffield United, Mossett in particular, taking advantage of him. But when a guy doesn't play for 6 months or however long he hasn't played, then plays one match, plays 45 minutes, then doesn't play again for 4 months, then plays 45 minutes, what do you expect? A guy's going to be rusty. So I think sometimes commentators overdo it when they pick on defenders, since we're having this conversation about defenders and watching it on TV.
Yeah, just a few things, other things to kind of point out in terms of what I observed this past week or so. A lot of the games I watched, actually I listened to on TalkSport. So, I mean, Thanksgiving weekend, a lot of driving around, not being in front of the television as much as I'm used to. But really listening to TalkSport's, what they call Game Day Live, which is the live commentary of the Premier League, as well as going around the grounds and, of course, going through the Football League and the conference in terms of all the latest scores and, you know, the latest goals and stories. Very useful, very informative. I'm not a big fan of TalkSport's general discussion and talk throughout the week. I think it's a little bit laboured. But on match days, it's really... And Champions League, too. Champions League games, too, they do the same thing, too, with that. It is really kind of a must-have if you're traveling or you're not in front of a television set. A couple of other things too. VAR, we've talked about so many times, but a couple of interesting things I thought in this was the Man United Aston Villa game. Arlo White, I don't know, with VAR, it's taken a little bit of the passion out of the commentators, even kind of the goal calls, because even the commentator doesn't know whether or not that's going to be a goal, you mean, at the end of the day, like it was in the past, or upon VAR review, maybe it's pulled back. So in the game Man United against Aston Villa, Arlo White said, it's 2-2 pending a VAR review. And that sucks out all of the energy and passion from the call. Because I'm listening to it, he's getting excited. I mean, he was excited. It was a good call. But then I'm like, oh my God, like what happens now if the VAR review says, like, no goal? That's one thing. The other thing too, Kartik, is just watching a little bit more of the Bundesliga from the past week or so. Actually, one more thing before I move to the Bundesliga. The Man United Spurs game, which you haven't had a chance to watch yet, but that one was another one that was mentioned by NBC. I think it was Arlo White again, was VAR review brought to you by Verizon. And when I heard that, I was like, oh God, really? I mean, NBC are masters of commercializing, you mean, the Premier League broadcasts. They're looking for different ways to, you mean, to have more sponsors involved. But VAR review brought to you by Verizon. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, that's kind of distasteful. I do want to give NBC kudos for something this week. Both on, and I said I haven't watched the game, the Wednesday game yet, but I do. I kind of fast forwarded through the broadcast. I want to sit down and watch the match, the Spurs Man United match, when I have a chance. But yeah, Chris, I think one quick thing, as a matter of fact, we tend to be sometimes very hard on NBC, and particularly our listeners now have become very angry, apoplectic, in fact, in some cases, toward this whole NBC Sports Gold thing. I do have to give NBC credit for Tuesday and Wednesday, though. They had overlapping fixtures with staggered kickoffs 45 minutes apart, and they did their best to show one complete game. It was Manchester City-Burnley on Tuesday, Manchester United-Spurs on Wednesday, overlapping it with a match that kicked off at another time. So it was Palace-Bournemouth on Tuesday. You saw a good percentage of the first half of that match if you watched on NBCSN. And then Liverpool-Everton, where you saw the last 40 minutes of the match on Wednesday in the Merseyside Derby. They didn't shortchange us on studio programming. Full pregame show with Kyle Martino, Robbie Earl, Ahmed Farid. full post-game show with the same trio both days.
But,
so,
but Carter, you can't give them credit for that. I mean, the kickoff times were arranged by the league. They had nothing to do with NBC. In some ways, I mean, it's good that they have the bonus coverage, that they, you mean, they have the one game.
And then
they have the second game after that. But I wouldn't give them, I'd give them credit for showing it, but I don't think it's anything, out of this world, because it's one of those things, if they didn't show it, people would be going around like, what the heck's going on at the Liverpool-Everton game? Or
they're trying to sell gold, and they were hoping.
Right.
We've criticized Bleacher Report Live a lot, and I know a lot of our listeners don't like them, but at least you can buy daily packages or single games.
Single game, right.
Right, because I know a lot of people who wanted to watch the Merseyside Derby who were like, oh my gosh, you're not showing it. Well, they ended up showing the last 40 minutes of it, so credit to NBC for that. The reason I want to give them credit is they did not shortchange us on studio programming, because I thought, okay, when I saw the programming block, I said, okay, so they're just not going to do a post-game show. They're cutting into the programming. But then they did take post-game to 6 both days.
Right.
With Goal Zone, with the same trio studio talent. So, maybe they don't deserve that much credit, but at least they didn't shortchange us, I guess, in order to try and push gold further on us.
Yeah, in some ways, the bar is set so low with some of the competitors that anything that NBC or ESPN does that's decent is lauded in some ways, because it's the Fox's coverage is so bad, which is what I was going to talk about a minute ago, which is the watching some of the Bundesliga games in the last couple of weeks. The thing that pisses me off big time is I'm watching a game. At halftime, the whistle blows. The commentator on the world feed says, all right, that was a great 45 minutes. And mid-sentence, cutting them right off, going right into a commercial. Yeah. And the same thing at full-time. At full-time, even the Mainz-Frankfurt game. It ended. It was a really exciting game, 2-1 to Mainz. Fans, going crazy. The players, hugging each other. And
it's the big derby, too, by the way, for those that don't follow German football.
Oh, that's true.
Closely.
It is, yeah. And mid-sentence with the world feed, right to a commercial. And the commercial, in a really abrupt ending. And that's the thing. In the past, a year ago, 6 months ago, we would have had one of the Fox, could have been Christian Miles or one of the other voiceover talents at Fox.
Voiceover, yeah, Rogandino.
Rogandino.
One of them. Yeah.
Right. So
Dave Denholm.
Yeah, Dave Denholm especially, a really familiar voice in terms of doing the voiceovers, saying, okay, well, that was full-time with their minds. Wasn't there a great victory for the smaller club? And we'll be right back after the commercial with some additional information, whatever it may be. But they don't even do that anymore. So I don't know if they've cutbacks, layoffs. They just don't care.
But when matches are on FS1, this is the really bizarre thing. You mentioned SoccerX earlier. I saw Stu Holden there. I had a lovely chat with him. And he told me, I'm flying back out because the next day because I have to get there. I'm in the studio this weekend for the Bundesliga. And the conversation basically was, the games are on FS1 this weekend. So, of course, you're doing a full studio. You're making sure you've got Holden in there. You're making sure you got Lawless available, Ian Joy, et cetera. But then when the match is on FS2, they pretend like it's an infomercial. I mean, so that's the other thing is the schizophrenia, because I think Fox genuinely has done a decent job, if not better than decent, in broadcasting Bundesliga games on FS1. And I am going to miss it next year. I know people have hit me hard for saying I'm not thrilled. I'm a skeptic right now of this ESPN deal and would have preferred for the league to stay on Fox. But I'll be convinced.
But what are you missing, though, Kartik? What will you miss next season?
I'll miss being able to when the Premier League. I know so many people think the Premier League is football.
Not about the league.
When I want to change the channel.
Not about the league, but
Bundesliga match.
What about Fox's coverage?
Next year I'm not going to be able to do that.
Right.
I'll have to turn on my iPad or go to Roku or something. I mean that's
right.
You're going from FS1 to ESPN Plus.
Yeah, I get that. And for me, too. I mean, for me to go ahead and watch FS2 or FS1 or whatever channel it would be, and then to watch it on ESPN Plus, it's not a seamless transition. I either have to go from my Amazon Fire TV stick to my Roku, or I have to go to the source, input source, change it. It's not an easy kind of flipping the channel as it is with cable or satellite, or depending on how you have your Amazon Fire set up. or Roku or whatever device, Apple TV, etc. I'll give you that. What I will not miss is Fox's coverage of the Bundesliga. In many ways, it's almost like a bubble. So you're running into Stu Holden. That's great to talk to him, and he's excited about the Bundesliga. But the bubble that they're living in is that they think that people know when these games are going to be on. And the reality is, I have no idea each week until a few days before. And I'm covering the TV schedules religiously. If a game is going to be an FS1, FS2, or even the Mainz Frankfurt game that was on Fox Soccer Plus on Monday.
Leverkusen Bayern was too. I wanted to point that out, Chris. Thank you for bringing that up. And sorry to cut you off, but I want to point this out, that it was a free preview week for Fox Soccer Plus. So I got to watch that match, which for me was one of the best matches of the weekend, results of the weekend. But why was that match on FS Plus? Well, so this is where there's an accessibility issue, right? Because the reason it was on FS Plus is college football was going on FS1, FS2, and college basketball on FS2, college football on FS1, and Fox. Now, this was one of maybe two or three weekends in a year when you have both college football and college basketball going on in mass. Generally, that does not happen. So generally, that game would not get bumped at FS Plus. However, it did get bumped, and those are two big clubs. That was a big match, two clubs that are also in the Champions League this season. So I thought it was just very lucky for me personally that I got to watch the match, because it was a free preview weekend for FS Fox Soccer Plus.
Well, that's the thing, though. I mean, I didn't know about this free preview for Fox Soccer Plus until you mentioned it. I mean, probably most of our listeners probably didn't know either. It's like, I mean, they have this entity, they have this channel, there's a free weekend. They're not even letting people know that it's available for free. But the other thing...
No, and you know what? I didn't know it either. So I went, because the Premier League match at 12:30 Eastern was Watford and Southampton, I think, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to watch that match. And I knew Bayern was playing Leverkusen. So I looked on FS1, wasn't there, looked on FS2. But then on my program guide, I saw Fox Soccer Plus was bolded. And I said, that's weird. Why is it bolded? I don't get that channel, because they leave the channels you don't get unbolded.
Right.
And I went to there, and it was a free preview.
Yeah.
Well, so otherwise, I wouldn't have known. I wouldn't have seen the match otherwise.
And that's one of that is probably my biggest complaint about Fox Sports is communication. It's just the basics. Just that they have all these properties, they have all these rights, they have all these channels. They have some good talent. They have some good studio talent. They have some good commentator talent. Some not so good, but for the most part, decent. But the issue I have is just communication in terms of just the basics, getting the information out there to soccer fans, to websites, to journalists, etc. Monday's game, Kartik, the Mainz Frankfurt game, which probably most of our listeners didn't watch, which is fine. There's no problem with that. I watched it. I enjoyed it. But the reason that was on Fox Soccer Plus is because there was something else on FS2. And I think it was Kevin Egan, over the weekend, probably on Monday, tweeted out and said, like, hey, does anyone know what channel the Ballon d'Or is on? And I thought to myself, I don't know. Is it on? Usually it's on YouTube. FIFA has the kind of the live feed on YouTube. Well, I found out later it was on FS2. And I'm like, man, Fox...
It was.
FS2. Yeah. FS2 didn't let anybody know that it's actually on that channel.
I would have DVR'd it if I'd known that.
Right. And that's why the Bundesliga was bumped to Fox Soccer Plus for that Monday game. But this is not just the Bundesliga. This is across Fox Sports. Just the consistency or inconsistency in terms of communication, not knowing when they'll be in the studio, they're not. All those things. It's just a really frustrating experience. And I don't know. It seems to be that Fox is kind of blind to that. It just doesn't seem to care, and it's just focused on U.S. men's national team, U.S. women's national team, Major League Soccer, and what, the World Cup and the Women's World Cup, and maybe Gold Cup too. And that's about it. That's all they seem to care about these days.
Yeah, and I don't know how much they really care about Major League Soccer. I don't think their MLS coverage has been ESPN took a step up where, and we said this on a couple podcasts ago, with John Champion this year. I don't see any sort of response from Fox, equivalent response or anything even remotely resembling that. I do think they put a lot of effort into the U.S. men's and women's national team. That I will say.
Sure. All right, Kartik, let's move on to the TV streaming news, and we've got some big news this week.
Yeah, it's been a pretty big week. And again, we haven't been with you for a couple of weeks, so a lot's happened. ABC is going to televise 5 games in the Euro 2020. You reported on it on Tuesday, Chris, and a lot of excitement about that. However, I wasn't so excited when I saw the matches that they're showing, right? It's unfortunately the time slots that those ABC time slots fit into were matches like Poland and Spain and mm-hmm. I think Russia and – is Russia and Germany?
Oh, Belgium.
Russia and Belgium. So that could be a competitive match, but I think that we think Belgium is going to win that. Spain, Poland, same thing. And the final will be on ESPN, like it has been since 2012. 2008, it was on ABC. But it's good to see ABC's now working its way back into the soccer space. MLS Cup was the first match on ABC since the 2014 World Cup, did we think, or 2016 Euros? And obviously, now 2020 Euros, there'll be 5 matches on ABC.
Yeah, and with this one too, with ABC especially, as well as ESPN and ESPN2, I mean, this for me will be ESPN's opportunity to advertise, really, the Bundesliga coverage and ESPN Plus. I mean, this is a great way for them to, I mean, over the air, 5 games, as well as ESPN and ESPN2, is really get people excited about the Bundesliga. And hopefully, I mean, from their perspective, Germany will do well in the tournament. And a lot of those players you can see then on ESPN Plus starting in August of 2020. Moving on, Kartik, to the next news item, and that is that Liverpool FC have launched a premium content offer on their YouTube channel. So what they've offered now is a paid subscription model on their YouTube channel. There's a couple of different levels of membership. The first level is, I think, $1.28 a month in the UK and gives access to emojis and loyalty badges, as well as 2 live shows every match, pre- and post-match interviews, and exclusive community posts. Definitely skewing to a younger demographic there. Level 2 membership is about $3.50 a month or so, and contains all the features from level 1, as well as access to U18 games, U23 games, match highlights, weekly previews and review shows, and content from the training ground. To me, Kartik, this is just another way for Liverpool to look at ways to monetize. I mean, to look at trying to get more and more money from their supporters worldwide. Whether or not this will work, we don't know. But to me, in some ways, though, too, it takes away from the broadcasters. I mean, the broadcasters and other YouTube channels out there, they're looking for ways to go ahead and add their own content. Here's another thing here that Liverpool will have, first access to a lot of this information, and will be able to, talk about and promote and film and shoot and stuff like that for their fans. So that's Liverpool launching their own YouTube channel. Next up, Kartik, and this could have some big ramifications, and seems to be, to me, a smart move.
Yeah, so this actually was another topic. You asked me at the outset what was discussed at SoccerX, and I made it sound like there wasn't much, but this was another thing that was discussed at length, actually, on a panel discussion, which is Octagon. Shopping the NWSL's rights for the next 3 seasons. None of those seasons are Women's World Cup years, although there is an Olympics, the Tokyo Olympics in one of those seasons, obviously the 2020 season. So this is a smart strategic move, I think, by NWSL. They're trying, because we've seen a bump come out of every World Cup. We saw a bump for WPS in 2011, then the league disappeared. We saw a bump come out of 2015 for NWSL, now a really big bump come out of 2019. But it's never been sustainable. Octagon is shopping the league to partners that want to be part of the league, not just part of World Cup mania. So watch this space. I think this is a very, very big thing. There's a lot of speculation that also about contracts and players and U.S. women's national team players. Sam Kerr just left the league, made her debut with Chelsea recently. So a lot going on in the NWSL and women's football space to keep an eye on. And it has huge implications for media rights and for the domestic league here in the U.S.
Yeah, I like this move for a lot of different reasons. Most of all is trying to add value to the NWSL in those non-World Cup years. So in the last few years, we've had several different... we had the Lifetime had rights, A&E had rights to NWSL. I think, was it Yahoo Sports?
Yahoo Sports did.
NWSL.com.
I know we're forgetting someone else.
I mean, the actual website.
Oh, Verizon, what was that thing called? Go90.
So, and that's the thing. It's been very inconsistent. It's been almost like one-year deals or a one-year deal that was
actually Fox showed
early.
Games coming out of the 15 World Cup too, NWSL yeah. World Cup, NWSL matches, and then now ESPN. So that's, five, six broadcast partners in a short period of time. Yeah. Lifetime had invested in the league, and then the league bought back that share of the business that they had sold to Lifetime, and some people who cover women's soccer very closely have questioned the wisdom of the league parting ways with Lifetime. This might alleviate that. This Octagon deal might soften that blow.
Yeah, it's a smart move because it really is trying to get a firm foundation, saying okay, all right, let's do a 3-year deal, and let's have someone commit to those 3 years and go all in. And we'll work closely together with them to make this a success, rather than kind of the short-term vision, which has for a lot of soccer fans in the United States, if you ask them about NWSL, who's broadcasting those games, there'll probably be a lot of confusion. But whoever gets the rights for this 3-year deal, hopefully will get the word out really, really well, and then people will know where the home of NWSL is. Now, moving on, Kartik, an industry analyst this week estimates that the MLS expansion fees could increase from $200 million to as much as $600 million for teams 31 and 32 in order for team owners to try to recoup their investment in the league because the TV revenue numbers don't work otherwise. Now, currently, MLS owners are making less than $3 million a year from TV revenue based on the current TV deal that generates $90 million a year for the league for rights to Major League Soccer, U.S. Men's National Team, and U.S. Women's National Team. But that $90 million is split between 26 franchise owners. Now, in an interview with Glenn Crooks on Pro Soccer USA, industry analyst Corey Leff said, quote, "If the TV media rights deal is only generating $3 million per team, the question becomes, is there anybody that's willing to buy a $600 million asset that generates $30 million in revenue? That does not sound like a great investment." So some really kind of sharp remarks here from that industry analyst. And with MLS expanding so quickly, which is good news in terms of money pouring into the league, you look at other leagues from around the world. You look at, the Premier League. You look at the Bundesliga. You look at La Liga, and most of the revenue that those top leagues generate are from television revenue. I mean, that's really kind of the fuel that drives these clubs to be able to get that big, huge amount of money to go ahead and buy some of the best players in the world. And in the United States, you don't have that. You do have a TV deal that's split between Fox and ESPN and Univision. But that's also split then between MLS, U.S. Men's National Team, and the U.S. Women's National Team. So in this next TV deal, which is coming up 2022, roughly, or 2023, actually, it's going to be more important than ever for Major League Soccer to get a big amount of money in order to go ahead and justify to a lot of these owners that are spending $200 million for a team. And as this analyst predicts, it could go up to $600 million for teams 31 and 32. Now, last but not least, Kartik, just a couple of quick items, and that is that Fanatis, which is a streaming service that specializes mostly in South American soccer, they've now added Gold TV in English to its list of channels available. And that is, there are, I think, $7.99 a month. You get Gold TV both in English and Spanish, as well as all of the beIN Sports channels, including the beIN Sports Connect channels and TYC Sports and much more. And then there's another new streaming platform called VidGo, which I've recently found out about. They're in the US, another streaming solution. This one is $14.99 a month. For the English package, which includes beIN Sports and a ton of English language news and entertainment channels. They also have a Latino Mass package, which is $24.99, that includes beIN Sports and beIN Sports en Español, as well as TYC Sports, Azteca America, and much more. So we'll have more details about those updates from both Fanatis and VidGo at worldsoccertalk.com. Moving on to TV ratings, Kartik, this is something actually we forgot to mention at the start of this broadcast, is your impressions and what you saw from the Liga MX playoffs. I didn't get a chance to watch the games, but what were they like?
Oh, I forgot that I was going to mention that on the outset. The first leg of Club America Tigres was on Thursday night on TUDN, and the wraparound coverage they give for Liga MX is phenomenal. And Univision has always been good at covering certain teams and certain aspects of Mexican football. And obviously, we've had matches on all kinds of different channels here: Telemundo, Azteca America, ESPN Deportes, whoever, Fox Deportes through the years. We still get some Tijuana matches on Fox. But the partnership with Televisa, I think, and the more integration of Televisa features into these, although, you know, I know there are people who will, of course, question all of that, considering Televisa is a shareholder in a number of these clubs, but that we're talking about. But just ignore that for a minute. And in fact, there was a time when the Premier League had a similar arrangement with BSkyB being an investor in several Premier League clubs. But the coverage is just very comprehensive. It feels like a big deal. They present really well. There is obviously the classic Latino passion from the commentators, but just the camera work, the production quality is better than historically Univision and Telemundo were in their own productions, right? When they were doing their own productions of soccer matches, of football matches. So that's the first leg. That was on Thursday night. Sunday night, the second leg was a phenomenal match. Tigres, who, I mean, these are two of the big, big clubs, obviously, in Mexican football. Club America being the best supported club. I had a back and forth, as some people may have seen on Twitter a week ago, after the Copa Libertadores final. Is Club America more popular or those two teams that were in that final, right? And maybe it's my point of view being living in North America. I think Club America is one of the biggest clubs in terms of support in the world. But anyway, it was just so well covered. Such a good, dramatic second leg. And I think the thing is, TUDN and Mexican football, Chris, are becoming more mainstream. And yeah. This is partly because there are more MLS fans and American soccer fans keeping an eye on Liga MX. And then I think TUDN is becoming more of a household destination, obviously, even for English language. Yeah,
right.
Especially even for English language dominant fans, because of how poorly Fox, or how biased many of us perceive Fox is in covering the U.S. men's national team, and then TNT's abdication of Europa League completely, or Turner's abdication of Europa League, and their unwillingness to broadcast most of the Champions League except behind a paywall. So, TUDN has ended up being, and Univision Networks in general, a destination for English language fans, mm-hmm. and that now has translated to more of them watching Mexican football. I don't know that Univision knew that would happen. I don't know that Univision intended for that to happen, but it seems to have worked. The promotion of these two matches in the Liga MX playoffs during Europa League, Braga Wolves on Thursday, and then the previous 2 days Champions League, I think spiked the rating a little bit, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And we'll get to the ratings in the next section, obviously.
Right, which actually is this section right here. But actually, with the Europa League, watching that last Thursday on TUDN, I was actually pleasantly surprised seeing a lot of promos, like ads for the Bundesliga. I mean, there was like talking about this weekend's coverage up on, I mean, Sunday was Bayern Munich, and then Monday was Mainz, and so on and so forth. So that's good to see, because I'm not seeing that on Fox. But going back to what you were saying about Liga MX, is one of the biggest secrets in the United States in terms of for soccer viewers is that a lot of these games are available in English language. So, for example, Tigres against Club America and Club America against Tigres, both of these two games, you mean the quarterfinals, the first leg, second leg, collectively on television got 3.7 million viewers. So I think each game averaged about 1.8 million viewers per game. Just enormous figures there. But both of these games and other Liga MX playoff games and regular season games too are available in English language. There's a few different options to choose from, but we have an article on the homepage of worldsoccertalk.com, which is how to watch Liga MX in English language. And it goes into the details and shows you that. And that's something too, that from my perspective before copy editing the article, I mean, I knew of some of it, but not all of it. So it's something that we're learning more and more. And I think Univision, I think they're strategic with this. I think they knew going into buying a lot of these rights that this could be something that would be interesting to English language viewers, as well as bilinguals. I mean, it's more and more people in the United States are bilingual. And Univision has acquired a lot of the English language rights to these clubs, as well as Fox. Fox is beginning to acquire some, even though they're not communicating and letting anyone know about it. So, it's exciting times. And that's the thing, too. I think it's more and more of us are starting to watch Liga MX. It just takes time. It would take probably a lot longer because we're learning more about the clubs, about the history, about the rivals and this, that, and the other, and how it works in terms of the playoffs. In the last few years, I've come a long way. And Kartik, I think you've been watching Liga MX for a lot longer than I have. 3.7 million people, and this was just the quarterfinal. The numbers are expected to go higher and higher as Club America advances through these competitions. So the TV ratings, we'll go ahead and have those at worldsoccertalk.com. All the details for the Champions League, Liga MX, Premier League, and much more.
Can I also point out one other thing about the TV ratings? Sure. I think what we've seen, in spite of the clunkiness of TNT's coverage and putting most of the matches behind the paywall, is that the ratings are, I think, now on average significantly better than they were on Fox.
They are.
Sure. So I think what you're seeing is ratings up on both the English language and Spanish language side, in spite of the fears that splitting the package would end up just cannibalizing the audience, Spanish from English or vice versa. And this sets up beautifully for CBS because the property now is in a place where its numbers are actually now better than when NBC took over the Premier League, or maybe not better, but similar. And they weren't similar when TNT took over the package. So,
But we could be in the same place as we are right now with TNT. I mean, it's possible that CBS over-the-air network shows the final, and then CBS All Access, their streaming package behind the paywall, which is cheaper than Bleacher Report Live.
But still,
it could be that all the games are available. All the games will be available there.
That's true.
So we could be in the same situation, actually maybe even worse in some ways. At least TNT is more accessible. But if we don't know what the details are yet. Nobody knows yet in terms of CBS what they're planning. We're hoping that they make the right decisions and learn from the mistakes that Turner Sports made with the coverage of the Europa League and the Champions League. And there are ways to make it work and probably find the balance between being able to generate revenue through streaming products, but also at the same time show more games on television, which would hopefully then lead to more sales on signups on the actual streaming side again. But again, we have to wait for CBS to make their announcement and get more details. And as soon as we do, we'll share those with you, the listeners. Now, Kartik, moving on to the listener mailbag. First up is Dave Brunk. And Dave says, I was out for a run and listening to the pod. Kartik's mentioning of the big three networks and how those of a certain vintage have a different point of view on Fox cracked me up. Thanks for the laugh. Actually, we had a few people mention that too, Kartik, on Twitter, about you sounding very vintage. Trey Hamilton says, my questions are what happened to all of the Ligue 1 games on beIN Sports Connect? And Trey continues. He says, do you think ESPN Plus will show the Bundesliga 2 and Serie B games? And just curious, how many games do you guys watch in a week on average? Keep up the good work, guys. So Trey, what I do every week is I basically kind of write my own notes from the games I watch, and then just and that way when I do the podcast with Kartik, I can look back at those notes just as kind of just to rekindle my memory of what happened in those games. But from this past week, I watched 14 games, so an average of two a day. Sometimes more on weekends, sometimes less on weekends. It just depends what's happening with my kids. But roughly about 14 is probably a good number. Do I think that ESPN Plus will show the Bundesliga 2? I believe so. There's been no detail about it yet. I know with the Bundesliga, the regular top flight Bundesliga league, like right now, Fox has the rights to that. And then they show the Bundesliga 2 games on Fox Soccer Match Pass. That's likely to continue with the new rights deal for the Bundesliga, having almost all the games from the Bundesliga on ESPN Plus, except for four a season on television, and very likely to have the Bundesliga 2 on ESPN Plus. Serie B, which is the second division of the Serie A in Italy, those rights have just been picked up by DAZN. So DAZN now has the J-League in the US, as well as Serie B. So I'm not sure how long that deal is for, but check out DAZN if you want to watch Serie B. And what happened to the League Earn games on beIN Sports Connect? It used to be, up until maybe a few months ago, or maybe even a few weeks ago, that beIN Sports had almost every single League One game from France every weekend, and almost all of those games were on beIN Sports Connect, other than the PSG games. What's happened in the past couple months, I think it is that those numbers of games, maybe there was like eight a weekend on beIN Sports Connect, are now roughly one or two. I don't know why. I haven't looked into it. If I had to make a guess on this one, this would be lack of interest, that there aren't as many people watching these games. They have the rights to show them. No one else has picked up the rights. But for whatever reason, they are not showing as many League One games on beIN Sports Connect as they used to. All right, Kartik, how about you? How many games you think a week do you watch on average?
I guess maybe six or seven matches a week, right. Or more. I guess, yeah, let's just be conservative and say about seven. So I think that it's kind of a similar thing. How do I keep track? Similar to you, take notes. Sometimes I have to go back and watch portions of the commentators commentary and the studio to make my proper notes about that aspect of it and not just the game itself.
Yep. And sometimes I actually go back to some of my tweets and that'll help refresh my memory too, some of the things, some observations I made. Next up is Nathan. And Nathan says, first off, love the podcast and the insights. So I'd like to talk about the upcoming Euro 2020 and ESPN's coverage. It's most likely studio coverage will originate from Amsterdam, since the IBC, the International Broadcast Center, is located. Since Bob Lee and Mike Tirico left, there is no clear replacement as the host, although I think Steve Bauer, who hosted last time, would be an excellent choice. He's been presenting for Premier League TV and is set to present Prime Video UK's Amazon's Live Goals show for the Premier League this week. It could also be a smart move to partner with UK partner BT Sport and take advantage of their excellent production crew and on-air personalities such as Jake Humphrey, Daniel Curry, Matt Smith, Lindsay Hipgrave, or James Richardson could be added to the presentation team, as well as a multitude of pundits and commentators like league commentators Darren Fletcher, Ian Dark, John Champion, and Adrian Healy will most likely return, and possibly Derek Ray. Before we go on and read the rest of Nathan's comments there, Kartik, what do you think as far as a host? Do you think that they would go with the UK presenter like Steve Bauer, or do you think there's someone on the US side that might take that instead?
Well, they've used Steve Bauer before, and obviously they've used Lindsay Hipgrave in the 2014 World Cup as well. They do have a partnership. I think they would probably, and Daryl Curry previously did features for ESPN and the yep. U.S. coverage.
And Satanta.
Yeah, and obviously Satanta before that, as with James Richardson, Satanta before that. I think they would probably throw in a U.S. Based host. Maybe it will be Dan Thomas. That's possible.
Yeah.
Or it could be Adrian Healy hosting the studio show. Don't discount that, although they'd probably want him calling games, right?
Right.
But it could be because there's also Alexis Nunez, who's now in
London.
Based in London, right?
Yeah.
You get basically it took a move to the UK, I think, almost a year ago now, and is doing things based there. A lot of Alison Bender's old work when she was with ESPN. So I think they'll probably have – they might take a few pieces from the BT team, but I think they will have an ESPN stamp on the lead presenter, whether that's putting Dan Thomas in that role or shifting in a different direction. And I think you'll probably see a lot of Gab Marcotti and Stuart Robson in mm-hmm. their coverage.
Yeah, the one name I would mention put out there as a possibility is Kay Murray, and that's something
that could
happen as a possible host who would be available to do that and focus on that 100%, while, say, Adrian Healy does the commentating, as well as, I mean, Steve Bauer might be, who knows, he may already have some other things going on for Euro 2020. Nathan continues, Mark Donaldson will probably be part of the team as well, but that means they would need one more commentator since Max Bredos, who worked in 2016, no longer is employed by ESPN. If they want an American, Glenn Davis would probably be the choice due to his 17-year-long association with ESPN. As far as co-commentators go, I like Taylor Twellman, but I'd honestly prefer Steve McManaman. Since it's a European tournament, Stuart Robson will probably return alongside John Champion. And it all depends if they have another on site as to whether or not Casey Keller or Craig Burley do co-commentating. For pundits, I thoroughly enjoy Ian Wright and hope they add some English or Scottish voices to the program. Craig Burley, Casey Keller, newcomer Don Hutchinson, Michael Ballack, Frank LaBeouf, and Santiago Solari will most likely be there. I think Chris Sutton would be a good addition, as well as Peter Schmeichel, Ray Parler, Ruud Gullit, Robin van Persie, and Jermaine Genus. I hope they have more commentary teams at the grounds, but that's unlikely since the Euros are stretched across Europe, although they had all commentators at the grounds for 2010 and 2014 World Cups. I think it would be amazing if they expand the Euro Tonight show, which means they would need more pundits. Also, the possibility of the final airing on ABC would be big, since the last two European finals aired on ESPN. The reason why I think this is a possibility is because they aired the MLS Cup on the main network, and that draws a lot less viewers. For some reason, I read an article that implies that NFL host Trey Wingo would host the Euros. He's a great host for NFL, but he has even mentioned on the Rich Eisen show that he knows nothing about soccer, so that would make no sense. I'm sure Jeremy Sharp and Julie Foudy will do reports, but it'd be cool to see more reporters too, even though I know you lot don't think reporters add anything. Which is true. Well, thank you for reading my lengthy email and thoughts. I hope there's a podcast this week. I thoroughly enjoy tuning in. So, yeah, definitely great feedback. A little bit lengthy, Nathan, but it's okay. And for the most part, I agree with everything. The only thing I think on this one is that if I had a guesstimate, is that ESPN wants to put their own stamp on this tournament, so they'll likely use a lot of their talent from the US, some American voices, but blend that with the European experts and talent that they have available to them. And there might be maybe one or two kind of surprise announcements added to that team. That's what I think that they're going to do, rather than to go to a very UK-centric team of studio talent and analysts, but I'm looking forward to it. I mean, that's something that with ESPN not having the rights to the World Cup anymore, in many ways the European Championship is just as exciting, if not more exciting, than previous World Cup tournaments. And you really have the cream of the crop in this tournament. Should be a good one. Should be exciting. Lots of, of course, the group of death with France, Germany, and Portugal. It would have been great if one of those games was going to be on ABC, but it's not going to be. And then one last thing too about Nathan saying about the possibility that ABC might show the final. Right now, it's ESPN. It's ESPN for the final for sure, unless things change. And I mean, maybe if the numbers are really positive and there's an opportunity, maybe they would change it. But for the most part, it's probably unlikely. Daniel McCurry, he says, listening to the latest podcast on CBS and UEFA rights, someone mentioned CBS will have better streaming than BR Live. Daniel goes on to say, I've streamed the SEC on CBS for the past few years, and it is consistently glitchy. Sometimes it'll jump 8 to 10 seconds and I miss a big play. If this is what we can look forward to with CBS and the Champions League, count me out. Their track record streaming their crown jewel SEC package is sketchy, so why would UEFA be any different? They have time to fix this, but if CBS doesn't care to stream the SEC properly, why would they do it for the Champions League? Any experience with that?
No, I've watched the SEC on CBS on television, so I that's a good point. I mean, I guess I've never really tried to stream those games, or maybe I did a few years ago and didn't have problems. I don't know. Thank you for that insight. That has me worried because, yeah, the SEC is the crown jewel on CBS, and if they if they're having glitches with streaming. I can imagine the Alabama LSU game a few weeks ago was on CBS, the SEC matchup. I can imagine if they have glitches with that it's not going to be any better with Champions League. So that's not great.
Next up is Nash Rambler, and he says, I heard no mention of CBS Sports Network in your discussion of CBS and the Champions League. Is this a situation where we won't know for sure if CBS has plans to carry Champions League matches on CBS Sports Network until official information is released from CBS? Or are you both hearing from your sources that live Champions League matches will only be available on CBS All Access and the CBS over-the-air network, presumably the final on Saturday afternoons over the three-year rights period? Kartik, have you heard anything definitive?
No, I think for whatever reason, CBS has avoided discussion of CBS Sports Network in this conversation, which surprises me. But that's and CBS Sports Network, by the way, is not in as many homes as NBC Sports Network. I know it's very rare that I have any cost or occasion to watch that network, but I actually did this past weekend because the Hurricanes game, Miami Hurricanes game, was on against FIU, and I think a lot of our listeners know what happened in that game, but stunning upset. But it was on CBS Sports Network, and I realized it was in a different tier of package than I had. I found a way to watch the game going to a friend's house, but it's not in the same tier that you get FS1, FS2, and NBCSN on DirecTV. And I know that there were people when I previously had the channel when I had UVerse, and I actually broadcast some games for them during the NASL when they had the NASL package. But I know a number of people could not see me on those games or complained that they didn't have the network because it's on a lower tier. So that might be a conscious decision by CBS not to mention it. Then maybe CBS will hold cable systems hostage, saying, hey, we got this property that's always been on high exposure networks, ESPN and ESPN2. Then it went to FS. It went to Fox Soccer Channel, but the Fox Sports Regional Networks, where when you combine the reach of the Fox Sports Regional Networks, it was in a lot of homes, a lot more homes than CBS Sports Network is in now. Then when they launched FS1 and FS2, they took Champions League there. But originally, remember, the first few years, CBS it was on Fox Sports Regional Networks, FX, which is in more homes than I think even ESPN's in, or a similar number of homes. Mm-hmm. And then now it's been in TNT on TNT, which is in, I think, the most homes of almost any cable network, other than maybe like the A&E channels, Lifetime, etc.
Yeah.
So CBS Sports Network has significantly less distribution than the channels that the Champions League has been on in the United States since the mid-1990s. Maybe that's why it hasn't been mentioned. I am curious about this, Nash Rambler, though. I'm wondering what they're going to do with it.
Yeah, I asked my contact at CBS about CBS Sports Network, and she said that we really can't say anything until the announcement is official. And as of recording this, the announcement hasn't been made official yet. I'm sure they're just going through, the lawyers are usually going through the paperwork and just making sure everything is correct. But on the earnings call that CBS Sports had just a few weeks ago, there was no mention of CBS Sports Network. It was just talking about the CBS Sports. Actually, most of it was about CBS All Access. The emphasis was on that, and a mention of CBS Sports over-the-air network. So presumably, I mean, we know that all of the games will be on CBS All Access streaming, and like Nash said, probably just the final on over-the-air, maybe the semifinal. But again, we won't know until we get some official confirmation and more details. And as soon as we get that, we'll post those at worldsoccertalk.com. Moving on to the next item, and this is in regards to my inability to be able to watch the MLS Cup final recently between Seattle and Toronto. Dave says, Locast is available in more and more U.S. cities. It's a non-profit that streams over-the-air broadcasters legally. They ask for $5 a month donation. So ABC, NBC, CBS are a click away. And yeah, Dave, I'm familiar with Locast. Unfortunately, I mean, I live in Florida, as Kartik does too. It's the third most populated state in the United States, and it has zero cities available through Locast. So I think I've on the Locast website, I've added my email address there to be notified whenever Locast would be in my area. It's probably going to be a long wait, unfortunately. Harry says, my problem with the gaffer's criticism of the MLS Cup viewing numbers is that you did not even watch it when it was on over-the-air television, and you follow it as part of your website that focuses on the media. Kartik mentioned the kickoff time, and to me, more important, this was on a mid-Sunday afternoon going head-to-head against the NFL, where last year's final was on Fox, did not compete against college football, and was played on Saturday night. That does matter. That is why it feeds into your reputation of being anti-MLS. And despite my criticism of the gaffer, I really do enjoy your podcast, as it is always very informative about the media side of the business. And yet again, yeah, I'm not anti-MLS by any means. I'm pro-MLS in terms of the clubs and the players. My beef is with the way that the league has been run, everything from the calendar to, I mean, the TV side, the TV production side of things. And the lack of transparency and some of the kind of governing issues in terms of the way that MLS is being run, as well as promotion relegation. I'll mention that too. And that's the thing, too, with ABC, I should have known better. I mean, this is my job. This is my full-time job. But the last time I watched a soccer game on ABC was 5 years ago. It would have been the 2014 World Cup, I think it was. And probably... yeah, some of the games on ABC. So it's been 5 years since I've been able to had to go ahead and figure out a way to watch ABC. And I going into it, tried Sling TV and tried some other streaming solutions, was unable to do so. And I have an antenna, so I could have watched the game. But at that point, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to forget about it and move on. Next up is Paul Robinson. He says, I heard you read out comments about Mr. Roses and Sunshine, Gary Birtles, the co-commentator, when I was in the car. He was doing the Wolfied commentary recently on the Spain against Malta game, and he wasn't quite as miserable as he is often. That's good to hear. All right, last but not least, Robert Thompson says... the U.S. men's team game against Canada was a real improvement, much stronger in the back with hard work in the midfield and good finishing when the chances were there. So this is my question. Is the U.S. men's national team better without Christian Pulisic and Michael Bradley? Oof. And Kartik, just real quick, my take on this is that it's not so much those two players, but I think really to me, the way I looked at this game was that... Greg Berhalter pretty much threw out his approach in terms of the way that this team plays, in terms of, you mean, kind of building up from the back, the tiki-taka, trying to get the team playing a certain system. That went out the window in a game that mattered more. The style of play changed completely. So I don't think it's a fair question to ask whether the U.S. men's national team is better without Pulisic and Bradley, because they played a completely different style in order to get the 3 points, in order to get a must win, which played more into the U.S. system that they're used to being playing, that they're not trying to be something else that they're not.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I think it's... The question about Pulisic, though, is a valid one. I think we saw already that the national team was not better without Bradley and Altidore. I think the one about Pulisic is a valid one just because he's so much better than every other American player that there might be a tendency for other guys to not see as much of the ball and not essentially assert themselves as much. We talk about how great guys like Kun Aguero and Gonzalo Higuain, et cetera, are. Dybala, as Dybala again is, you know, having a really big impact now this season, Juventus, as they're trying to hold off Inter. How great these guys are at the club level, but then they go to the Argentina team. They give the ball to Messi and try and watch him, right? Mm-hmm. Essentially. Yeah. So I think the U.S. has taken on a little bit of that. And we saw it in the Trinidad and Tobago game now over 2 years ago, where if Pulisic did almost bail the U.S. out. But there has been a tendency. His level is so much higher than the other American attacking players in particular, that there's been a tendency just to kind of become overly reliant on him. And that's an unfortunate thing. I mean, I think I have to go back and look at how Armenia played at the height of Mkhitaryan's success and how Wales was. Well, we could probably give some insight into Wales with Giggs and Gary Speed, when there were these one or two really elite players on national teams, and then there was a huge drop-off in the talent level after that. The U.S. is close to that point with Pulisic. I mean, I don't know who you would say is the second most impactful U.S. player that can all at the club level who's also impactful at the national team level, because even when you look at guys like DeAndre Yedlin and the Bundesliga contingent from the U.S., they tend to play much worse for the national team than they do for their club team. So it's almost a little bit of an Argentina situation. So maybe when Pulisic is not there, they raise their games because they have to.
Yeah, and my thing too is with the U.S. is which team will we see in the future? I mean, will it be more of the kind of direct, more of the kind of the U.S. style of play, or will it be more Greg Berhalter's style of play? And whether this kind of Canada game was more kind of a one-off, just trying to get them to do everything necessary to win the game rather than like playing the system. And I think in many ways that doesn't answer Robert's question, but that's what I'm more interested in is trying to see in terms of the whole team approach. And while I agree with you, Kartik, in terms of Pulisic, I think a lot of players kind of sit back and just let him go. I mean, just it's one of those things that he is so influential on the pitch, especially for the U.S. men's national team, is that he can create so much. And sometimes other players, their playing levels might drop off a little bit because, you know, he's doing so well. All right, so we want to get your feedback. So if you have any questions or comments or feedback or observations or tips, or if you have experienced CBS All Access and you've gone ahead and streamed the SEC and had some thoughts or some input in terms of what your streaming experience was like, let us know. We want to hear from you. You can always reach us via email through web at worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk and on Twitter at worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. Kartik, where can they find you on Twitter if they want to find out everything that's going on about the British election and who you think is going to win next week?
Yeah, it's going to be heavy on the British election in the next week. So if you don't want any news about the UK election, then don't read my tweets till December 14th or December 12th. KKFLA737.
Okay.
Is where you can find me on Twitter.
All right, and you can find me at World Soccer Talk. I'll be tweeting there. All right, everyone, thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, Spotify, Pandora, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audio Boom, Overcast, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. We would greatly appreciate it. In Kartik, heading into another weekend, including the Manchester Derby, including, I think, Gladbach against Bayern, I think on Saturday morning, which should be good. I have no idea if it's on FS1 or FS2, but it should be good. What should they do?
Enjoy your football.